Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome to Bhagavad Gita. We're trying to distribute many, many Bhagavad Gitas all the time, but especially this month, because it's something for everybody. Some people read it and say they find it hard to understand, but no one can really understand Krishna. So if they're trying to understand it in relation to their material education, it will be very difficult because it, you know, it doesn't fit in. If we just hear the Bhagavad Gita and we just let, you know, relish Krishna speaking, then Krishna reveals himself accordingly. So this chapter is chapter 3 called Karma Yoga. Of course, when Krishna is talking about karma, it's not exactly ordinary karma yoga, it's Krishna karma. But there is yoga where people just try to do good karma. But that's, in the process of trying to do good, you might do bad. And it's not going to get you back to Godhead. It can make you live a little bit better in this world. But it's a beginning. But really, Krishna is always talking about bhakti. No matter what else he's talking about. So start with what? Around 28. One who is in the knowledge of the absolute truth, Almighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well that difference between work in devotion and work for fruitive results. So there Krishna is saying that. It might look the same. A devotee might be doing what the same work as a fruitive worker, but it's different. Because of what he's trying to gain is different. Like there's so many self-help and, you know, get what you want books in the market now. And they do have a lot of good techniques for achieving goals and setting goals, and but their goals are all wrong. So they're expertly, you know, digging their own grave, so to speak. You know, they're maybe like, I haven't seen here, but in America when I grew up, they had people had big grounds, and so sometimes they'd have a dog, and they would put the dog on a chain, and then they had the chain hooked to a long cable. So the dog could run. But the dog would always run and, you know, never learn to stop before he gets to the end of the rope. So they're like that. They're just running, running, running and bashing their head into something or partying. And the newspaper, they said every year at Christmas in the Liverpool station, they set up a special hospital tent just to take care of all the people that drink too much. And they're thinking, you know, I had such a good time. Then they pass out and they need special doctors to help them so they don't die. So they're working hard just to get drunk or just to get, you know, a big something to use for further sense gratification. So that's their foolishness. But if someone's working for Krishna, working to serve Krishna, to help devotees or to take care of themselves so they can chant Krishna and serve Krishna, then that's different. Might be doing the same job, but the same work, but the difference is the mentality. So purport. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge. And he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in this material conception of life, in his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord's. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the absolute truth has three different features: Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. Personality of God, it is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. It's quite clear. The activities of Krishna consciousness mean basically what? Activity. What's the main thing you do?
Chanting the holy name.
Yes, right. Chanting the holy name. That whatever else we're doing in Krishna consciousness,
reading Bhagavad Gita,
chanting and
dancing,
yeah, dancing for Krishna, cooking for Krishna. Everyone's cooking. And when I was in Fiji, some people would say, "Well, I can't afford, you know, to offer cook for Krishna." But you can eat everything you cook for Krishna, right? But they were meat-eating people, and they were thinking that, you know, if you cook for Krishna, you have to cook nice sweets, eats and everything. And even one Hindu temple, the priest said, you know, I don't offer anything to Krishna because I eat onions and he doesn't like onions. You know, so I don't have time, I'm too busy. Too busy collecting money for the temple to offer anything to Krishna. He said, if I offer him something, then he might expect me to offer every day, and I can't do that. So he knew, you know, something about Krishna, but he was more interested in his own sense gratification. But the idea is, if we start doing these things, chanting and offering everything we Krishna, and it's not like you can't eat, you eat it, you have to wait a couple minutes. Not a big deal. But then we get purified and we start thinking of Krishna, and it's not that the senses in Bhakti Yoga, the senses are fully satisfied, but in spiritual activities, tasting prasadam, chanting the holy name, hearing about Krishna, seeing a beautiful form of Krishna, or smelling flowers offered to Krishna, if you can find any that have a smell. Not much these days. Right? Maybe because they're so cold. Once in some places they smell. Like then I go to Bali, they all smell. And Vrindavan, they smell really good. But they fall apart quickly.
Yeah.
They're natural. And these are preservatives. So anyway, all the activities, the same activities that everybody's doing anyway, but you center them around Krishna. Some things are restricted. Certain things you don't offer to Krishna, you don't do for Krishna, because not for Krishna's pleasure. So that Krishna is Rishikesha, he's the master of the senses. So if we satisfy him, then our senses will also be satisfied, much better. Otherwise, what is it? Palena Paragiyate, that it just burns like fire. The more someone tries to gratify their senses, the more they want. Never satisfied. The tongue can't be satisfied. It's unlimitedly voracious. Even though the belly sometimes can break wide open from eating so much, someone will just want to have more. Even devotees sometimes. But that's why Krishna so kindly, if we offer the food to Krishna, then it's spiritualized. And even someone is still trying to enjoy that without even thinking of Krishna, still they get purified. It's Krishna's mercy. And we enjoy chanting, we enjoy dancing for Krishna much more than material things. So that's how it works. The bhakti yoga process, by becoming attached to Krishna, we become detached, you know, from the material world. Just like if you go in the water and start swimming, then you're no longer on the ground. You can't be both, you know. So we learn about Krishna by practicing. Just like swimming. If you want to learn to swim, you have to get in the water. You know, you can study for 100 years, but if you don't get in the water, you're not going to. If you get on the floor, you can kind of do the stroke, but really you have to get in the water. So we get into the activities. But beginning with chanting, ending with chanting, middle is chanting. That's always there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And of course, in Lord Chaitanya's movement, the most powerful way to get more of Krishna is to try to give Krishna. Somehow or other, do whatever we can to teach someone else to chant the holy name or to, you know, read the Bhagavad Gita or give prasadam. These activities are very exalted transcendental activities and beneficial for everyone and easy for everyone to do. So wait, another one. Bewildered by the modes of nature, the ignorant fully engage in themselves in material activities and become attached, but the wise do not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performance lack of knowledge. This important verse for devotees in the preaching. Persons who are acknowledgeable falsely or unknowledgeable falsely identify with a gross material consciousness and are full of material designations. I'm young, I'm old, I'm Tamil, I'm Bengali, I'm American, I'm Chinese, I'm educated, I'm foolish, you know, all designations. And most people are very proud of whatever designation they have. It's called upadhis in Sanskrit. You know, like a doctor, they put so many things after their name. What degree they have, where they got it. The body is a gift of the material nature, and one who is too much attached to the bodily consciousness is called muda, or munda, or lazy person without understanding of spirit soul. Ignorant men think of the body as the self. They accept bodily connections with others as kinsmanship. The land in which the body is obtained is the object of worship, and they consider the body, the formalities of religious ritual, to be the end in themselves. Now that's a paraphrase of a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Kunape Tridatuke. What is it? Kunape Tridatishu. Then the last is Saeva Gokara. They consider the land of their birth to be worshipable. They consider the body made out of three, mucus, bile, and air, to be themselves. And they go to the holy place just to take a bath. So they're compared to the cow or the ass. Not intelligent. The cow, of course, we honor and love the cow, but they're not noted for their intelligence. That example is that sometimes a calf is dead, but the dairyman will bring the dead calf and the mother will lick and give milk. She won't even realize it's dead. So the cow has to be taken care of there. You know, they're loving and nice, but it's like that, like an ass is really stupid. So people think that the rituals of the religion is the end in itself, and that happens in almost every religion. We find, you know, if you check the history, there was some powerful reformer or acharya or something, and there was no Muhammad throughout all the rituals, Jesus throughout all the rituals, Lord Chaitanya throughout all the rituals. He went to temples and he danced for the deities, and he didn't build temples, but then he did describe how to do the rituals. He told Sanatana Goswami to write the Hari Bhakti Vilas and how to describe all these things. But that's not the end. But in order to keep the common man in line, the rituals are there, so we have regulated life and something to do, but it's not the end. You just do the ritual and everything is fine. You just wave the incense and then everything's fine. It's like many temples, especially South Indian temples, the people just come, they buy a plate with some coconut and incense, and that's it. And the priest, you know, what's your name? Okay, well, I'll give you blah, 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 blah. And that's it. You think that they've found a ritual. But that's okay. We should offer things to Krishna. But when you go to the holy place, and if you just take a bath, but you don't associate with the same people that should be at the holy places. Nowadays, often there's none there. They're just people trying to get their donations. But you have to find, there are people. You have to find them and hear from them, or go to the holy place and just chant and read and hear about Krishna and take advantage of it. If someone thinks, well, I just went and took a bath, like Kumbh Mela, 20 million people trying to take a bath at the same moment, right? And then they think that's it for the year, or for 12 years. They don't have to, they've done that. That's not the real thing. The real thing is to realize we're not this body, we're servants of Krishna. And then to engage regularly in the service of Krishna. So, social work is nationalism and altruism are some of the activities of such materially designated persons. Under the spell of the such designations, they're always busy in the material field. For them, spiritual realization is a myth, and they are not interested. Those who are enlightened in spiritual life, however, should not try to agitate such materially engrossed persons. Better to prosecute one's own spiritual activities silently. Such bewildered persons may be engaged in such primary moral principles of life as nonviolence and similar materially benevolent work. So that's good if people are like that. And we shouldn't criticize them. There's other places where Krishna said that someone should not disturb the minds of the foolish people. But somehow or other create a chance for them to chant or get some prasadam or give them Bhagavad Gita. There's many of these people like environmentalists. So they have some idea, and I've met them, and you try to tell them, we'll do it. You know, we'll save the world without God. We don't need God. Many are realizing more and more that you're not going to do anything until people uplift their spiritual awareness. There's no material solution. what they're trying to do now, you know, they know the oil's going to run out. So they're madly trying to find alternative sources of energy so we can continue to live the same madness. We won't have to change our lifestyle at all. We can just get electricity from sunlight or thermonuclear or, you know, some other way to get, run our cars and run our televisions and do everything. So, but that's not going to make anything any better. So they can continue to run their automated slaughterhouse or something. They want to find a different kind of way to get electricity. That's foolishness. There has to be spiritual awareness. There has to be, you know, some sort of understanding of how everything is connected. But those people who are, you know, trying to do good, trying, like there's some very nice kids that come to the restaurant now the last couple of days, and they're fundraisers, and they're working for one big institution that sponsors old people in Asia and stuff that are, you know, not. So that's pious. They're really thinking it. They want to help people. But that, if the person just, you know, you give the old people some place to live and food, but they don't give them any spiritual, then it's not ultimately beneficial. But it's pious. So we encourage it. That's nice. But then they're reading Bhagavad Gita also, asking all kinds of questions. So, but we don't tell them and give up that. Although I told the one boy, you should sell Bhagavad Gita. He said, I could sell a lot of Bhagavad Gita. Get out there. Because if he did it, he would become so happy.
Yeah.
Then he might become a really big seller, you know. Men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness, and therefore Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. But the devotee of the Lord are more kind than the Lord, because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try to engage them in acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So that's a nice end to the paragraph. That the devotees, of course, they're not trying to disturb them to tell them, oh, you're in Maya, you're going to hell. Like, I don't know if you have those around anymore. And there used to be these Christians that just be out in the street, you're going to hell, you're going to burn, you know, the end of the world is coming. It doesn't really enliven people very much. It makes people angry. But we try to offer them somehow or other engagement in Krishna service. And so Prabhupada made temples. He, you know, Lord Chaitanya took the parties out chanting in the street. We had devotees out, you know, giving books out in the street. And we have restaurants and we have festivals. All kinds of ways to just give people a chance to serve Krishna. Rath Yatra engages so many people. Right? Food for life. You know, many people are just lining up to get food, but they're getting prasadam. And you know, there's some chanting going on or something, hopefully, and people know it's Hare Krishna. So they get more and more interested. So devotees, they try every way they can to find ways to give people a chance to do some service. Even if they just give a donation. Sometimes we just show them that, you know, we're doing feeding program or helping drug addicts. And, okay, I like that. You know, if they knew it's really a religious movement, they might not be so inclined, but then they get benefit. They eat prasadam, they get benefit. They come to Govinda's because they like the food. They might not know why it's so good, you know, because it's offered to Krishna. But they know this is something different. We don't get anywhere else. And gradually they understand, well, it's because of Krishna. And then they start to ask some questions, or they read the book, or they just hang around, and then they get benefit by helping people, you know, by being with devotees. So we all want to, that's the duty of every devotee to think whatever he can, some way to give somebody something Krishna. Of course, books are super important, but not everybody's ready for a book, but, you know, they can take the sadham or they can hear the chanting. Maybe that's why we go out chanting in the public. We make some kind of ratayatra, big or small, and, you know, people benefit like anything. So any questions? Comment?
You mentioned one point that they're making find different way how to find electricity to do the most large process and more.
Carry on.
And but they don't want to change lifestyle. You cannot connect, understand how this is connected. How things are connected. How you can explain the more variables?
Well, I mean how, well, like any you know, God is the center of everything, and everything is created by Him, and everything is in balance by nature, you know, and it supports each other. Even certain things eat smaller ones, and they eat the plants, and everything is connected. You can't do anything that, so that's spiritual realization. And then people become more concerned. Some people don't realize God now. Many people, the environment is like their religion. But then without religion, they're not going to get it right. You know, that's what they don't understand. But at least they're trying. They may take up some of the, some regulated principle. They want to be nonviolent. They want to, you know, they become vegetarian, against abortion. You know, these things are happening. Kali Yuga is getting pushed back on different fields. But it's all ultimately due to the Sankirtan movement, which is purifying things and giving protection. And then people, some people take some part of it. So, but basically, you know, they're working hard to, you know, to find another way to get the same energy to keep the cars moving and the trucks moving and the whiskey factories working. And, you know, like in Nigeria, it's hardly ever electricity provided by the government. Of course, rich people all buy generators. And there's no good roads and, you know, a lot of crime. But they built, Heineken built one of the world's most advanced beer factories. In one of the cities where there's only like two gas stations or something. You know, and even then they don't open at night.
They don't open at night.
Yeah, but that beer factory always has electricity. You know, it's always producing and their trucks are rolling. They got brand new trucks. And Coca-Cola factory is rolling. And, you know, everything is going on. That side is going on, always providing. Like Russia, at certain points, it just, food was very hard to give. But vodka was always... people want it. They get it. So that's... they need to be enlightened, and but in order to get enlightened, they really need to be purified. So Prabhupada stressed on, you know, giving kirtan, giving prasadam. Not so much philosophy for most people right away. Not even any. Even if you tell them you're not their body, they'll be so confused how they... then they can't participate anymore. But, you know, after they've chanted a little bit, some people are already advanced, they're already ready. We have to judge that. But if they get the book also, that book has a lot of potency and shakti, and when someone opens it up and they're going to see what it is, they get purified. It has special empowerment in Prabhupada's books to change the mentality of people and make people become really aware. Even if some people just very quickly become vegetarian just by reading Bhagavad Gita, that's the beginning. Some people just start chanting. They never met a devotee, but somehow they got the book and they read it and they figure, okay, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. And so we want to think about how to distribute as many books as possible, or to help those who do distribute by you know, sponsoring, giving money, you know, giving books. We're trying to send books like all over the world. I just came from Africa. We're trying to get books for that place. And, you know, people want knowledge. Everywhere there's people, there's wanting this. They want. But we have to give it to them one way or another. And some people, usually it's the poor people in those countries that are interested. Rich people are busy enjoying their wealth to the max and not very concerned about it. They don't need God. Of course, they'll do some kind of rituals. Yajante nama yajnaste, Krishna says. I'll do some jagya in name only, and everybody will see that I'm a great man. And everybody will see that I'm giving charity and that I'm doing some religious activities, and then I'll be glorified even more. And the demons think. Okay?
Any other questions? Any questions? Yeah? Yes, one hand question. Yes, yeah. Any questions?
Question? Everybody satisfied?
So did there's any question?
Yeah, there's one.
In the paragraph, it's in the purport, it's mentioned that we shouldn't agitate the people who are materially busy.
Yeah.
And when we are distributing books on the street, we are really, we have to tell them a lot of sometimes philosophy as well. It's like
not so much. Well, then those are people that might ask about it. But we don't want to just tell people you're all wasting your life and, you know, right off. Some people are ready for that. I mean, when I first went to the temple, that's the first thing they'd be like, you fool, you're wasting your life, what are you doing? You know, and I agreed, you know, but not everybody will. I wasn't sure, but, you know, I couldn't argue, but not everybody is ready for that, you know, so we have to judge. So if we go chanting and some demon doesn't like it, that's all right. You know, if we're trying to distribute books and there's somebody that says you shouldn't do this, you know, that, you know, but we don't try to just, when someone's in a hurry, just get in their way and keep, you know, come on, take it, you know, or just chase them down the street, you know. Sometimes new devotees do that. I said, you can't do, no, I just want to give them mercy one voyage. But we're going to be thrown out of here very quickly if you keep chasing people that say no. But if they're disturbed by our chanting, you know, what can be done? They just don't like Krishna. That's different than disturbing them by trying to tell them that all their activities are just, you know, wrong. Especially if you're talking about people that are trying to do some kind of pious activity. It's not the ultimate goal. But we have to show them what the ultimate goal is and attract them to Krishna. That's why we make temples. That's why we're out in the public. That's why we're having festivals and trying to put books everywhere so people can, you know, find out.
Nara says, Krishna is always speaking Nishkam Karma Yoga, then going to transcendental knowledge. How are they connected? Speaking third chapter, Nishkam Karma Yoga.
It's called Karma Yoga.
And then going to fourth chapter to receive the transcendental knowledge. How are they connected?
Well, it just carries on, you know. Because here, Krishna's actually talking about bhakti.
Yeah.
And in the beginning he talks about karma, but real karma is Krishna karma. Yeah. And then that will lead you into transcendental knowledge. It's good to look through the whole Gita sometimes and see how it flows along. Then chapter 5 is called
Action in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, karma yoga, action in Krishna, real Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting more into how to really serve Krishna. But it doesn't really get into Krishna until chapter 7. That's when Krishna really starts talking about himself as a person.
Sure.
Yeah. So the Prabhupada said that chapters 7 through 12 are the most important. Starting with chapter 7 where Krishna starts to talk about himself and how he is here and there and everywhere, and then ending with bhakti. Chapter 12 is bhakti yoga. Then again there's so much philosophy in that. So So he said it's like a sandwich. You have the two bread, but in the middle is what you really want. So that the seven, those middle chapters are very important.
So Maharaj is traveling all over the world, and this is a month he responds to some Bhagavad Gita. You can either we can cover ourselves and meet some friends.